Yeah, Matt's cooking now. Matt just suggested Bob Myers moderate the presidential debate tonight, and man, Matt's cooking with that one. Matt George, host of the Locked On Kings podcast, did a fantastic post show that threw me off a little bit last night on ABC.
Donovan's in the chat says game one of the presidential finals tonight on ABC. I don't know if that's getting to game seven either.
Please God, no.
America's going to drop out. Like, forget it. Just forget it. There's no need.
We're scheduled to get back for game seven of that. I don't think we're going to be there.
Yeah, we're still waiting for our Game 7 appearance with Matt and Kevin over at the ABC 10 studios. Matt, what'd you think last night? Devin Carter, the newest member of the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, my initial reaction was one of negativity. In fact, it's still up on Twitter. You can see it on Twitter, which was I want to get it, but I don't get it, because here is Monty McNair once again drafting a guard. You now have eight guards on your roster, the tallest of which being Kevin Huerter, who's 6'7", and he's also probably the worst defender out of the eight guards on your roster at that time. So, I mean, I did not get it. I did not understand it, especially when we knew that there were trade conversations happening up until the buzzer, and I thought we were going to get a buzzer beater trade. I thought it made sense for the Kings to wait and to see who was on the board at 13 and then to try and capitalize maybe on a team who's willing to move up to maybe go and get a Dalton Connect or go and get a Devin Carter or whatever the case may be. So the initial reaction was I'm not necessarily a big fan of I'm not a fan of the position, not the pick. I'm just not a fan of the position. I felt here's an opportunity with 13. You have an asset that you can use to address a clear weakness and need to this offseason, and you didn't go out and do it. But then, guys, as I thought about it more and more, and over the couple of hours where we spoke to Monty, we spoke with Devin, and then to the point where I finally recorded the podcast last night, the pick grew on me significantly. And I had kind of the moment that clicked for me when I was thinking about it and talking about it is I've been consistent this offseason with the belief that the Sacramento Kings need to get their roster and Mike Brown's system on the same page. To me, Devin Carter screams Mike Brown guy. Like, Devin Carter screams to me, this is a guy that Mike Brown can go and use on both ends of the floor, who's going to work like hell on the defensive end and is going to play a dynamic on-ball defense. He's got that near 6'9 wingspan, so he can guard multiple positions. So he's versatile on the defensive end. He's a hustle guy. He crashes the glass, and Mike's always calling for rebounding outside of Domantas Sabonis, and he talks about his guards. He talks about his wings. Everybody go and crash the glass. Carter brings that, averaging almost 9 rebounds a game, which is absurd for someone who's 6'2". And then on the offensive end, at least last season, he was a plus 3-point shooter at 37%. So in theory, on paper, he can space the floor and be out there with De'Aaron or Malik or whatever combination that Mike wants to put out there. He checks all the boxes of, in theory, what we think Mike wants from a versatile defensive first guard on both ends of the floor. So if I'm going to be consistent with, hey, the Kings need to get the roster and Mike Brown's system on the same page, Devin Carter might be a home run pick in that sense.
Yeah, I just look at Devin Carter and more watch him. And I said it earlier, Matt, this guy, he has this, maybe I'm jumping out the window, but he has all defensive team potential. And, you know, I know a lot of people want the 6'8 guy that can defend and things of that nature. But I know they talk about his wingspan, but if you just look at him, this is a guy that can defend threes. He can defend guys on the way. I know he's only 6'3", but he's a guy that physically looks like he can guard a guy that's 6'6", 6'7", or anything like that and bother him. I think it's a great pick. I am a little, I wouldn't say worried about the offense, but I think that is further behind, even though he did average almost 20 points per game at Providence this past season. I do feel like his offensive game, I don't know if it necessarily is going to translate right away to the NBA, but I think the first day of training camp, of summer league training camp, he's going to fit in as a defensive player, and even more so in Mike Brown's philosophy and system.
Yeah, you love the idea of him with Keon continuing to be someone, and these are two guys now that are going to take even more of the defensive pressure off of De'Aaron Fox. And that doesn't mean that De'Aaron is now getting a pass and doesn't have to play defense. It doesn't mean that De'Aaron's not going to take on some defensive responsibilities, especially in the fourth quarter when he knows he loves to, or we all know he loves to step into that moment. It means he no longer has to. The Kings are not reliant on De'Aaron Fox to guard the opposing team's best guard for 48 minutes or however long De'Aaron is in the game from start to finish. That means that you can probably ask and expect a little bit more offensively now out of De'Aaron to where, hey, we need you to be that 30-plus per game scorer like you showed you could be at the beginning of the season. Now be that for all 82 for us and then into the playoffs as well. So I love that idea and that possibility of how it works with De'Aaron. And then just specifically with Devin Carter too, Casey, kind of building off of the point that you're making. I mean, I just think the versatility is – it really jumps off the page. I mean, he is 6'2", so he's more naturally, I think, the size of a point guard than he is the shooting guard. But I think his play type is more of a shooting guard than a point guard. But he has the wingspan that suggests, okay, you can switch him on threes and maybe even get away with times with having to switch him on fours if, like, that's – it's not – you're not looking to switch your 6'2" guy on a 6'9", 6'10" forward. Right. But, you know, in the flow of an offense, sometimes if there's a screen, you got to switch him on. And Carter doesn't seem like a guy who's going to back down from that challenge necessarily. So I love the versatility that he brings in that sense. Now, I still think the Kings have a problem. And it's – their perimeter defense does get better by adding a Devin Carter, I think. I still think the Kings have an issue of they struggle to defend the three because they don't have enough guys that can close out effectively. Now, with a 6'9 wingspan, okay, that's certainly better than, no disrespect to Davion Mitchell because I'm wishing him the best in Toronto, but Davion being 6', just over 6'1", I think his wingspan was only like 6'6", 6'7". That might be generous. Like, you can shoot over the top of that. We saw Klay Thompson do it in hitting a game winner early on in the season in Golden State. I still think the Kings have an issue of they need longer guys to disrupt shooters a little bit more than they were able to last season. But just because Monty didn't make that move last night does not mean that the window to make moves is closed, as evident by today.
And real quick about that, you're not wrong at all. I agree with you. I'd love to see guys more so in the 6'7", 6'8" range. But one of the things that I think about that I don't want to say is being overstated, but I just, I think you can get away with certain guys. I keep looking back to the conference finals, the finals, and I look at Dallas, right? And I'm like, all right, the Kings match up against Dallas in a playoff series. Now we got Devin Carter. Devin Carter can't guard Derrick Jones Jr. You know what I mean? Like, you can put Keegan Murray on a P.J. Even though P.J. Washington doesn't do that much, you could put Harrison Barnes on him or something like that. Like, I think you can still match up without having 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", across the wing. You know what I mean? But it definitely helps if you have that, for sure. Not saying you don't want that, but I think you can get away with it if you have guys that are tough enough to defend, like a Devin Carter.
Well, I think Monty agrees with you 100%, Kenny, because Monty said it straight up last night. He said it actually multiple times. You watched the NBA playoffs this year. He said there are a lot of Devin Carters out there. So, Devin fits a type or a mold of player, and Monty went into this in a little bit of detail, a player that can give you something on both ends. What was the conversation with Davion? Look at what he can do on the defensive end. We love it. But there's a question mark on the offensive end. With Sasha, look at what he can do on the offensive end. There's a question mark on the defensive end. I think Keon Ellis is showing what he can be on both ends of the floor, but he hasn't shown it enough yet, which is fine. And I think we're all curious to see, okay, now that the breakout year is done, what does Keon Ellis look like next year? Does he continue to make a jump and solidify himself as a starting two guard? If not, hey, here's Devin Carter that you maybe have a look at. Kevin Huerter is still on this roster, although I don't know for how much longer. Malik Monk, I still think, should be in the conversation for starter, and I know why he hasn't been, but I think he should be because he's the third best player on this team as of right now. So the Kings have options, right? And Carter gives Sacramento more options. And just because last night the Kings took another guard and at the time had 8 guards on their roster, they're down to 7 now because they traded Davion Mitchell away. Just because there are 7 guards on this roster right now does not mean that Devin Carter isn't a top 3 of those 7. I think we know if Monk and Fox are top 2, far and beyond solidified. 3-4 right now is Keon and Carter battling it out. So he has the opportunity to, even though you have a log jam at that position, he has an opportunity to be amongst the best that you have at that position. Mm-hmm. So You don't pass that up necessarily in the draft if you think that's what he can be, because you have too much talent at that position.
Matt, you've mentioned the two players. Let's get to part two of the news involving the Sacramento Kings over the last couple of days. Of course, Devin Carter was drafted yesterday out of Providence, and then this morning, Davion Mitchell, or earlier this afternoon, I should say, Davion Mitchell and Sasha Vezenkov, along with the 45th pick in the second round of the draft today, were in a later second round pick, were traded to Toronto in exchange for Jalen McDaniels. Or Jalen Williams. Jalen McDaniels. And that, you know, we all kind of became Inspector Gadget after that, looking into, okay, it's all right. Well, it felt like something was probably inevitable with at least one guard as it pertains to Sacramento. Then we started, you know, looking at the salary cap aspect of all of this and, you know, the money aspect and what this means in that regard. And so when you saw that trade go down, when you had a chance to digest it a little bit and see it for what it was, what did that tell you?
Well, I know I wasn't the only one that did a double take and initially thought they read Jaden McDaniels and got super excited for half a second. And then you read Toronto and like, wait a minute, something's off here. So here's like, to me, the best way to simplify this trade from my understanding of it is it's purely financial. Like from a basketball standpoint, let's be honest, this is not a good trade. You traded away a former lottery pick. You traded away a EuroLeague MVP who I think had more to give and was not quite used properly, and 2 second-round picks to bring in a guy who is he adds depth to the wing, which is good. You have another 6'9 body. Awesome. Been calling for more of that. But a guy that was woefully bad from the offensively last season. He shot 16% from three-point range, guys. 33% from the field, period, or around that 33-34%. So offensively, it was a nightmare. And that's just one season. Could be an outlier because he's had better seasons before that. In his career, he's like a low 30s three-point percent shooter from three-point range. So to me, this trade has really little to do with Jalen McDaniels outside of, hey, you added another body. To me, this is getting $7 million under the luxury tax, plus an extra $7 million on top of that under the tax apron. So you freed up money and giving yourself a little more wiggle room to still make a significant enough move to put yourself back into the luxury tax, but not over the apron. Mm-hmm. I think that's what this is about, right? Because as you were financially, I think the general belief is, and I've been consistent with this, the Kings are going to have to go into the luxury tax if they want to make the moves that they're looking to make to really make noise in the Western Conference. I feel like it's inevitable. Now, you don't have to go 2 aprons in and totally cap yourself out and be paying the ultimate penalties. And just if you go and take the time to look up, I'm talking to listeners here, go and take the time to look up the different aprons and what they mean. Because once you pass certain aprons, you're limited on things that you can do. For example, when you pass the first apron, which the Kings have about $15 million, a little bit less than $15 million before they pass that first apron. From that point, they cannot execute a sign and trade that keeps them over that apron, nor can they go out and, let's say, in the buyout market later on this season, a player is waived. The Kings cannot take in that player and that salary if it keeps them over that apron. So there, it sets limitations to what that they can do. And that's just the first apron. The second apron has a lot more penalties. But the Kings can now use that $7 million that they freed up, plus, hey, let's say an extra $4 or $5 million here or there. They can go out and get a $14, $15 million per year player or whatever the case may be. Or no, $15 million would be too much. Let's say they can go get a $12, $13 million per year player, stay under that first apron, and that $13 million per year player could be a important rotational wing or a seventh or eighth man. Who knows what – or they can use it for a buffer for a bigger trade later on. I think the whole point is the trade that the Kings just made – by itself is not a good deal. As a precursor to something else, which I think we all believe it is, then it's to be determined, but I think it makes sense. To me, Monty's not making this move just for the sake of saving the Kings money. That's not where the Kings are at this point. They know they need to be competitive, and they know this roster has a lot more work to be done. And adding a 6'9 wing who, as of right now, I don't think would get playing time over Kessler Edwards, that's not the improvement this team needs to be making.
Help me with something. So there's a, as we move up, there's a luxury tax line and then a first apron.
So there's a luxury tax, a first apron, and a second apron.
Oh, I thought the luxury tax line was the first apron.
So the luxury
tax. I thought like that's the first marker, and then the second apron is like that's where you're pretty much in financial hell.
And Matt, you'll break this down, but basically, it's like if you go to 100 million, if you go 100 million to 109 is the luxury tax. Then 110 to 119 is the first apron.
Yeah.
And then 120 and above is the second apron.
Yeah.
Is that how it goes, kind of?
Correct. And the aprons are put in place to competitively limit what you can do, right? So as soon
and
as
and for cross, how long?
Correct. Because as soon as you cross into the luxury tax threshold, you're paying, that's the whole point of a luxury tax, you're going to be paying extra money depending upon the salary that you're over that limit. It charges teams who want to pay to have super teams. It charges you extra money to be able to keep that team together. But there are some teams and some owners that go, I don't care. I'll just buy a team. I'll try and be a New York Yankees in this, you know what? Like they might try and act that way. So the aprons are put in place to where, okay, now competitively, you can't do certain things. Even if you're willing to foot the bill, you're not allowed to make
the NBA has restricted them.
Correct. It's part of the CBA. So essentially it means like just because you want to pay doesn't mean we're going to allow you to pay and just build the super team and do whatever the hell you want because you're willing to pay a tens upon tens of million dollar tax bill.
Ooh. The Hawks are a first apron team. Ooh. Lord.
Jeez.
You know the Lakers are. It looks like This could change. Memphis is, Miami is, New York is.
New York is going to be a fourth apron team.
Now,
New York's inventing the new apron.
Right.
Now, Portland, I think, just came off of being a first apron team with the Brogdon trade.
Mm.
That looks like
they
that was
be trying to get out of the luxury tax. So they got Anthony Simons, and we talk about Jeremy Grant. They may want to move.
They got DeAndre. I mean, DeAndre's 34. Jeremy's 29.8. Anthony's 25.9. Robert Williams is 12.4. Matisse Thybul is 11 million.
And they got DeAndre Ayton too. You said eight, but mm-hmm. I forgot.
Yeah, that's 34. Whew, Lord.
For.
Lord.
Five wins.
Man, that's tough.
Jeez.
And Phoenix is, you know, they're a second apron team. And then, you know, some of the restrictions Matt was talking about aren't just like limiting flexibility. It's like, yeah, if you want to dabble in this world of being a second apron team, it's going to get worse year after year after year to where it's the old, you know, Joe Lacob, hey, as long as we're winning titles, I'll pay for it. That I can understand. What if you're not? And then that's where you have to make the decision of, and that's why I give the Knicks a lot of credit. Like we've started to put ourselves in a position where we're an expensive team. Let's go compete with Boston while we feel like we're in the best position we possibly can.
Absolutely.
To compete with Boston, because they're either going to have to keep winning titles and pay more and more and more and more and more and more into this or get out.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to be the ones who force them out.
Yeah.
Because Lord knows Milwaukee ain't going to do it.
No.
Daryl Morey ain't going to do it. Let's get it done.
So I see this comment in the Matthews Mattress Chatty House.
Not very
no
good,
affiliation.
Man.
No affiliation whatsoever. They are not my mattresses, although I will take
need to be.
A portion. I will take a portion of sales. I do own a Matthews mattress, by
there
the way.
There we go.
Hey!
But Justin said, Kings got fleeced. And I think on the surface, people are going to feel that way because they're just looking at the talent.
First of all, what year does Justin live in? Like didn't that term didn't expire with the pandemic? What are you doing, Justin? Be better, Justin. Come on, man. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
Be better, Justin. Anyway, he's for a talent for talent perspective, to some extent, he's correct. However, you have to understand the purpose of this deal. The Raptors have cap space. They have room. You're asking them to take on salary, which is essentially, I think it was around $12 million total of salary. Now, they sent four back to Sacramento, but around $12 million total of salary, maybe closer to 13. Like, you're asking them to take on salary and do you a favor to take on salary into, granted, both these guys are expiring deals. I assume Sasha is going to be an expiring deal. He's got 1 year left on his contract after this, which is a team option. I don't know if Sasha plans on staying in the NBA for that team option or the Raptors are going to just let him go, whatever the case. And Davion Mitchell is a free agent at the end of the year, although they'll have his restricted rights, and I imagine they'll keep him around. But you had this team come to you and say, we will relieve some of the financial pressure that you're under to help get you back under this luxury tax line so you can continue to make more moves. But in order to do that, we're going to need something in return. So maybe you can feel like they gave a little too much of a something by Davion and a couple of second rounders. Although it's hilarious how people think second rounders don't matter when they're in your organization. And as soon as your organization trades them away, now it's like, what are you doing giving up multiple second round picks? Like, in reality, a second rounder might amount to something. The likelihood is it probably won't. And I think Monty is totally fine with moving on from a couple of second rounders if that opens up the financial freedom to be able to go out and make an actual substantial move. Yeah. Now, he hasn't made the move yet. So if you want to be skeptical until the move is made, I understand that to some extent. But when looking at this trade and analyzing this trade, don't look at it as a talent for talent acquisition, because that's not what it is. It is a financial burden relieving move to put the Kings in a position to do something more significant down the line. And that could be this offseason. Hopefully it's this offseason. Mm-hmm. That could be during the regular season and around the trade deadline too, if it takes that long.
And Matt, you I'm
just
sorry.
Just real quick. Yeah. As the draft has wrapped up here, you're going to see a lot of undrafted free agents signing with different teams, including the Sacramento Kings. As Shams reported, Louisiana Tech's Isaiah Crawford has agreed to a two-way NBA deal with the Sacramento Kings. Again, that's according to Shams Charania of The Athletic. Isaiah Crawford of Louisiana Tech has agreed to a two-way NBA deal with the Sacramento Kings. Sorry,
Casey. And that brings up a good point that we never talked about that I just am perplexed by, and I think it's ridiculous. It's almost as ridiculous as the second half cafeteria green room that they had for the second round.
Unnecessary.
Draft. Why are they having two teams in the California Classic? The Kings. One team will be in Sacramento, one team will be in Golden State. You didn't see that?
I didn't know that.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know that. That announced all along?
Just about a week ago.
It wasn't officially announced, I don't think, but it was initially reported by Jake Gaden and a couple other Sacramento-based reporters.
No, I got an idea, guys. Let's take the simplest thing and make it ridiculous. Let's do that.
And then Joe Lacob couldn't find another damn team to get into his little rip-off California Classic, so he had to go to Uncle V and be like, Uncle V, bail me out.
Well, sorry, I don't know why Uncle V keeps bailing out these sorry-ass Bay Area owners, and I'm sorry to those Sacramento Kings players who've got to go play at an empty Chase Center next week.
Get your dental.
Though it won't be 110 degrees when they're out there, so salute to those guys.
Cavity filled while they're out there.
No, they could do that. They could do that.
Yeah, no, I thought about that because I don't know Isaiah Crawford is going to play.
Respectfully, of course.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, I that completely flew over my head. I did not know that was a thing.
What I'm curious is Doug going to coach both teams? Because it hasn't been officially announced, but Mike Brown basically said at the end of the season in his end of season press conference, Doug Christie was going to coach the summer league team. Mm. Does he get both? And does he get the Vegas team?
That
too?
Other one's just coaching itself. It's
player coach.
It's just coaching itself.
Isaiah Crawford, you're the player coach of the Bay Area California Classic.
Let Malik coach him.
Oh yeah. And no, look,
I don't even know if he's allowed to. Monty couldn't even talk about him yesterday.
Hey, well, look,
Matt got in trouble for bringing up Malik Monk last night.
God forbid.
Hey, the drip walk when Malik and Devin come through.
Oh, that's cold. Ooh, yeah, it's going to be cold.
Devin ain't going to be playing because Devin did his thing. We didn't get a chance to see him come into the on the red carpet or anything else like that. Him and Rob Dillingham, they were the top two yesterday. Top two.
So the Kings already might offend Catholics by playing the soundbite that Malik Monk gets every time he hits a three or hits a big shot. What in the world are they going to play every time the Friar gets a bucket inside the Golden One Center? That's what I want to know.
I don't even know what they would play. I have no idea. Ooh, Ian brings up a good point. And add Kuz to that trip walk.
Oh, if Kuzma comes here,
League Fitz ain't ready for the Kings.
The Kings immediately become all League Fitz team one. Like, we'll win the League Fitz championship with those three guys.
Facts.
And then us too?
Oh, come on. It's over, man. Matt George, six man.
Oh, Matt George being there with his sleeves rolled up, his tennis shoes on, he'll look good.
I got a pair of Nikes. I'm excited to debut, but y'all going to roll your eyes at it. But I'm very excited about it.
Oh man, no, I need to know. I need to know what they are. I need to
custom
know.
They're custom Nikes that may or may not involve a thing that I'm super involved in that you guys can probably guess.
What,
I'm super nerdy about. I have it tattooed on my
Lord of the Rings. Oh, wow. Oh, all right.
Got Lord of the Rings one.
Well, you were right about the you were right about the rolling of the eyes. I'm excited to see him. I'm excited. So Matt gets to be on the drip walk with D'Lo Casey, Kyle Kuzma.
Yes.
We
cooking.
Devin and Malik. So we're off and cooking. And I'm sorry you got yelled at by Monty McNair last night. You were just
the
doing
the way that Monty can yell. Yeah. I can't talk about Malik.
Yeah, Monty, I can't talk. Yeah, idiot. Okay. Like, you did not know I can't talk about that. I forget, yeah. Which is so weird. Like, if you're allowed to, it's illegal. Like, it's legal. Like, you're allowed.
I don't get it. That's why I was confused. I was like, you have a new rule now that you can sign free agents as soon. So you agreed to a deal, but you haven't announced it yet. But it's legally can do it. Just tell us that.
Well, they did.
Malik's coming back, Monty.
So it's weird that it's weird to me that they can't sign because they literally can't sign. Mm. But maybe Monty didn't. Maybe Monty forgot. Maybe Monty forgot it's a new rule and it is legal. I can talk about that. That's fine.
I thought I had the green light too because I asked him the question about Carter fitting with Mike and he's like, oh yeah, we're excited to have Mike back. I haven't talked to you about that, by the way. I'm like, okay, you also haven't talked to us since the Malik thing. Oh, I can't talk about that. All right, well,
Matt was like, I'm in there. Monty said, no, you're not.
Well, look, we haven't talked to we haven't talked to Matt since Malik Monk Day. And just get
Malik Monk Day,
his whole
yeah.
thoughts about how that went down, how surprised, if you're surprised, about how that all played out.
I was surprised in the sense that I thought at least Malik was going to go into actual free agency itself so he could officially hear the offers of what was out there. But I mean, I think we can connect the dots to have a pretty good idea that Malik doesn't agree to do this with the Sacramento Kings if he doesn't have a pretty good idea or his team doesn't have a pretty good idea of what the offers are looking like outside of Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I think Malik did the Kings a tremendous favor by agreeing to this and getting this done early on. And I think that speaks volumes on twofold. First, Malik getting this done to where the Sacramento Kings could go into the draft with the clear understanding that they know Malik is going to return. Now, it didn't matter because they took a freaking guard anyway, so all that crap point that I made didn't really matter, so chuck that podcast segment out the window. But on top of that, I think it's a representation of how this organization is changing for the better and how their reputation is changing for the better, to where things like that do not happen in Sacramento pretty often. And now Malik Monk's not a tier free agent on the level of like the superstars in this league, but he was a coveted free agent in a class that unfortunately there was not a lot of money out there for them at this point in time. So the Kings managed to get him to re-sign before free agency officially opened. He did them a favor. It happened relatively quickly after Mike Brown was extended. I don't think that's coincidental. I think if we're talking about the changing of a culture and how that has opened up the window of possibility for a player of Malik's status to agree to stay here in Sacramento and help them out, that whole culture change started when Mike Brown took the job in the first place. So I think it all goes back to Mike. Of course, De'Aaron being his best friend has something to do with it. I think Malik knowing his role and how important he is to this city and this team has something to do with it. I also think, I genuinely think he loves and being here in Sacramento. So it all played into a fantastic day, a home run of a day for the Sacramento Kings, to where they would know that even though they still have moves to make through the remainder of this offseason, it's not going to be nearly as bad as it could have been. I was on the level of saying it would have been a disaster to lose Malik Monk. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have him secured and he is part of your core to now, Keegan and De'Aaron are the guys that you need to worry about 2 years from now, re-signing and getting them part of your core going forward. I think it puts the Sacramento Kings in a tremendous position, and it's worthy of a lot of celebration. And the reaction on social media, I think, says it all. Malik is loved here in Sacramento, and that move was significant here in this city.
It feels like it did a lot, Matt, to set up yesterday, today, tomorrow, the upcoming days, where we expect a lot of movement around the league, and we certainly hope for a lot of movement, or at least significant movement, around Sacramento. The fact that you don't have to preface every conversation you're having with other teams with, well, we don't know what Malik is doing yet, so we've got to figure this out and all this stuff. But if this all falls into place, like the fact that you have that in line, and I'd probably take it a smidge bit further, the fact that you were able to execute that trade today.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's related to something moving forward, but even if it's not, it puts them in a really prime position. Or prime might be a stretch, but it puts them in a really good spot for some business over the course of the next couple of days.
Flexibility still continues to be kind of the key buzzword that Monty has used his entire career here in Sacramento. And this trade today, the acquisition of Devin Carter, it falls into that mold. I mean, you have the flexibility of a guard that is versatile and can play multiple positions. It seems to fit where you're going. And now you have the financial flexibility to build upon that by finding the right deal. And it could still be Kuzma. It could be Cam Johnson or Finney Smith from the Brooklyn Nets. Like, just because those trades didn't happen on draft night when I and many of us wanted them to, doesn't mean that they're not still potentially available and out there. The one thing that we know for sure is this team, as it's constructed, can't be what you roll into next season with the tremendous amount of confidence. If you want to really make waves, we're not just talking about making the playoffs. And Monty said a number of things last night. One of the things was Monty said, like, the goal is to make the playoffs. Anything less is unacceptable. Those are his words. So, I mean, he's setting the precedent for how we need to judge him. But I know Mike Brown isn't just trying to get to the playoffs and calling that a successful season. They're trying to legitimately compete in the Western Conference right away. Now, we know that they probably have a ways to go before getting there. But if that's the goal, okay, make the moves and run your organization like that is the goal and that is the expectation. And if that's the case, then like Mike Monty talked about last night when talking about roster construction, he knows there are still moves that need to be made. And everything that he's done over the last 24 hours has prepared Sacramento to be able to make those moves. Now it's about actually executing them. And I think that's where a lot of the skepticism or fear from Kings fans comes from, is because we went through two trade deadlines and an offseason where the Kings could have made moves, but didn't. They tried, but didn't. Now there's no try. There's no could have. Like, you are in a, you've set yourself up. You have to make that move. So go out and make it, whatever it is.
Do you think that, I don't want to say a deal is done, but he's there. Like, he had to do a couple maneuvering right here to make whatever space he needed, but he is. Like I said, I don't want to say it's done, but he's really locked in on a move that is close to being done. Do you read the tea leaves and think that's the case? Or is he just trying to make himself available for stuff by doing this move?
A mixture of gut feeling and just side conversations. I think Monty knows exactly what's out there and is available to him, and it's about finding what is right and what's the right price for it. I think that's the point of where we're at. I don't think Monty is still scanning for the assets or scanning for the guy or guys that could be available. I think he knows what's out there. I think he has options that he thinks can improve this roster. Which is the best option? Which fits the most with the Kings going forward? And which of those options can you get for the package that you've pretty much let the world know that's available, which mainly centers around a Harrison Barnes and/or a Kevin Huerter plus your future draft assets. I think, like, if I'm putting it like in a, I almost have this picture in my head of the Kings and their war room are sitting around a massive table, because it can't be tiny. It has to be a massive table. And they have these three, like, pieces of paper, or three scenarios or pictures of players, or four of them or however many, on the table in front of them. And they're looking at them and they're discussing amongst themselves, which is the route we want to go. That's where I think we're at. And they're just trying to decide which is the right route. I just don't see a scenario logically. I don't see a scenario where the Kings go, none of this works. We're not doing anything. It just doesn't make sense.
More two-way players for the Sacramento Kings. This one, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, Washington State's Isaac Jones is headed to Sacramento on a two-way deal. Again, that according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Washington State's Isaac Jones has agreed on a two-way deal to join the Sacramento Kings.
And just a reminder, Keon Ellis was an undrafted free agent at the end of the Keegan Murray draft, and look what he turned into. So don't be just going, okay, and moving on. Take a look at these guys.
And I guess we got two California Classic teams, so we might be banking about a dozen more of these announcements.
I can't believe
this is Vlade's dumbest move as an owner.
Oh, no.
What are we doing?
Vlade catching the stray.
Whose idea was it? I don't know if it was Vlade.
We'll blame somebody we don't like. Nobody we do like.
It's Joe Lacob's idea.
There you go.
This is damn Joe Lacob's idea. What do you think the move is, Matt? We got a couple of minutes left. You talked about Monty setting the path. We know what money is there now. We know, I mean, really, realistically, the possibilities are endless. Like, there's nothing, they can't do that because of this. They can't do that because of this. No, they can pretty much execute a trade for any player that we've discussed. You know, there are some interesting guys who will hit the market on Sunday. So you're lining up the path. What do you think the path is?
Yeah, I don't have much of a faith in free agency after just talking about how great it was for the Kings to re-sign Malik. I still don't think Sacramento is ever going to put themselves in a confident position as a free agency destination unless they're going for kind of a rotational or depth piece, which maybe they are, and that's fine. You freed up money to be able to do that. But if in terms of significant moves that are out there, I still think Kyle Kuzma makes a tremendous amount of sense. The Washington Wizards have shown that they're willing to deal to collect assets. Now, I don't know why in the world they traded Denny for in that contract for what they got for it, but hey, more power to them. Kuzma just makes a tremendous amount of sense to me. I know there are concerns, but I think he has great upside. The Brooklyn Nets are showing that they're willing to deal, so why not give Jordy a little bit of piece of his California home and give him Harrison or Kevin or whatever to make him feel a little more at home there. Meanwhile, you're taking away all the assets that Jordy has, poor guy in Brooklyn, but go out and get Cam Johnson or Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, those are pieces that make sense that probably aren't going to cost you as much as a Kyle Kuzma trade might potentially cost you. I don't hate the idea, too, of the Kings picking up the phone and making an inquiry about Julius Randle. I don't think anything's going to come of it, but the Knicks have a lot of money on their books, and I think Julius Randle is a baller. I don't understand the Julius Randle hate. I understand the concerns of fit and how it could work with Sabonis and stuff like that, but I think Julius Randle is a good player who you could potentially get on the cheap. And don't forget about Zach LaVine. He's still there. It's still a possibility. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but he's still there, and he might be available for cheap as well. So these are potentially options that, like I said, Monty has on the table in front of him, and he's just trying to pick which one is the right one to pursue. But Kuzma is the pick for me. I think he just makes too much sense.
I agree.
Great stuff, Matt. We'll be locked in, no pun intended, to the Locked On Kings podcast over the course of the next couple of days as news continues to break and rumors continue to swirl around the Sacramento Kings. We appreciate you as always. We'll be locked into your post-debate show with Kevin John. Can't wait to see what that looks like. Man, and we'll be back here tomorrow. We'll do it all again, starting at 10 a.m. with the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.